In a moment, the reading will be from Genesis chapter 29, starting in verse 1. When God our Creator made us in the beginning, He made provisions for our happiness. When God gave us our being, He also gave us some things that we need for our well-being. I observe that on the first pages of the Bible, and we see those things in two pairs: marriage and childbearing, work and Sabbath keeping. Hopefully that way of speaking sounds familiar to you by now. I'm speaking to you about these things as preparatory to going on in our study of the Ten Commandments. So far we've considered the first three commandments, but there is some controversy associated with the fourth commandment. And I know that one good way to settle some of that controversy in our minds is to see how the Sabbath appears in the scriptures before the Ten Commandments. So we're looking into that together for that purpose and for the several other benefits that we get from looking at these things in the scriptures. We looked in on these blessings as they appear in the historical account of Noah and the Ark and the Great Flood. Today we look in on these things as they appear in the historical account of Jacob and his family. Genesis chapter 29, starting in verse 1. So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." Then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." Then he said, "Look, it is still high day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep." Now while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. Then it came to pass, when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were, and right here this word is kind of difficult. All the different Bibles say something different, and also the scholars are left unsure of what is meant by this. Because it either means something complimentary, there was something good about them, or it means there was something weak or unhealthy about them. And so everybody seemed to have something different to say about this. Okay, so at this point, this Bible I'm reading from says Leah's eyes were delicate. But Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Laban said, It is better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled that I may go into her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob, and he went in to her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? And Laban said, It must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. What do we see in the Bible's account of Jacob and his family pertaining to the provisions God made for our happiness when he created us? Well, we see observance of the 7-day week, but with no mention of Sabbath keeping. Laban was observing a 7-day week. You see it mentioned just here, finish her week or fulfill her week, verse 27. We know this is a 7-day cycle because, for one thing, in Hebrew, the word week here is simply a form of the word seven. The Hebrew number seven and the word week are clearly the same root and practically the same word. And then the reference here is to something that elsewhere in the Bible is referred to as a 7-day wedding feast. I'm going to look to Judges chapter 14. Judges chapter 14. And Judges, of course, does represent a time hundreds of years later, but it seems to be the same thing. Judges chapter 14. And this is the account of Samson going to take a wife from among the Philistines. Judges 14:12. Then Samson said to them, Let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within the 7 days of the feast. And it's a wedding feast that they're talking about. And a few verses down, Judges 14:17. Judges 14:17. Now she had wept on him the 7 days while their feast lasted. And it happened that on the 7th day, etc., etc. So between the fact that the word week here in Genesis 29 is essentially the word seven, and the fact that elsewhere a wedding is specifically referred to as being a 7-day feast, then we understand that that Laban here and the people with him are observing a 7-day week. So we surmise that because God created the world with a 7-day cycle, and because then we observe Noah, we're looking on Noah, and he was observing a 7-day cycle. Then we surmise that that seven-day cycle that God ordained at the beginning, 6 days of work and 1 day of Sabbath keeping, that 7 day cycle is still known and is still being practiced. But there is no mention of Sabbath keeping. And if you read a little bit before this and a little bit after this, take in all the material on Jacob, and even if you go and take in all the material on Isaac and on Abraham, you don't get more than this. You see the 7 day week, but you don't read any mention of Sabbath keeping per se. It's just like we had in the account of Noah and the flood. A little bit less than what we had in Noah and the flood. Noah and the flood, we had obviously the 7 day week being kept by Noah. No specific mention of Sabbath keeping, except that it was that every 7 days he was doing something very significant in sending out the dove, but no mention exactly of Sabbath keeping. Here we have the 7 day cycle mentioned again, but definitely no mention of Sabbath keeping. Now, this thought occurred to me as I was reading this and thinking about this week. It's as if the 7 day week from creation is remembered, but the Sabbath day is all but forgotten. And as soon as I thought it like that, then of course my mind went forward to remember the Sabbath day. And so because of the general impression that you get here that the Sabbath day is being forgotten, and because of the fact that we know that the commandment will be remember the Sabbath day, I'll put it to you that way. It seems that that Sabbath observance is being forgotten or all but forgotten, even though the 7 day cycle from creation that includes the Sabbath keeping is still being observed. You know that that's how things are around us in the world today. All over the world, for the most part, people observe a 7 day cycle, and calendars are sometimes arranged differently. Sometimes a business calendar, Monday will be considered the first day. Normally in our society, Sunday is the first day. There's a 7 day cycle being observed. We know that 7 day cycle comes from creation, even if a lot of people have never thought of that. That's the only place it can come from, because as you know, it's not any astronomical phenomenon. And yet, a lot of people don't think about Sabbath observance. Interesting as to that, because a lot of people do like to have Sunday off or Saturday off or both or something, but probably a lot of people don't think of it as Sabbath observance. So if somebody told a story today, and maybe told a story about their daughter getting married or something, they might mention the week, and they might mention the days of the week, and it might be obvious they have a 7 day week, but they might not say anything about Sabbath observance. That's what we seem to be getting here. Notice that the 7 day week is being used by a sinful man or by sinful men as part of mistreating their fellow men. Some people are being done wrong here. And Laban says, finish her week. A week-long marriage feast. Well, we don't do quite that, do we? Some marriages, nothing but the essential is done. Some sort of brief ceremony of giving vows and somebody pronouncing, and then the people go home to spend the night together. It's sometimes there's a bare minimum, but then of course a lot of times there's a lot more to it, right? Sometimes the wedding is all day Saturday, the preparations for and the eating more than once, and the long ceremony and supper and everything, and you're not over not done till late in the evening. And the day before was the rehearsal dinner and some other things going on that. And maybe the day before that, the brides all did something, or the, not the brides, the bride and the bridesmaids all did something together. And, you know, it can be even just among us, you know, we can have a 3 or 4 day wedding feast. They apparently had a 7 day wedding feast. So the 7 day cycle that God instituted at creation, they are observing that for rejoicing and enjoyment and celebrating of what God ordained. But then Laban is using it also to do some people wrong. He's doing wrong to Jacob. He's also doing wrong to Leah and to Rachel. He's doing wrong to a number of people who will be adversely affected by this. And even though this is something that God ordained for man's benefit, this sinful man, Laban, he doesn't mind to include that 7 day week that God instituted for man's benefit to be a blessing to man. He doesn't mind including that as part of his evil deed that he is doing. He's going to be ready to say, well, what I'm doing to you is not so bad, because in just another 7 days, you can have the one you want also. Now, you know, it's wrong, of course, to do something hurtful to another person, no matter how you do it. But actually, to take something that God has given for our benefit and to kind of pull it into your scheme as part of the workings of the evil deed you're doing, and maybe some sort of part of how you manipulate somebody, and maybe part of the, how you kind of rationalize it as not so bad, that's really taking of the name of the Lord in vain, added to the other harm that you're doing. So that's what sinful man is shown doing here, not using the 7 day cycle God instituted as a blessing to man, but as part of harming man. So I could say here that it seems like if the benefit God ordained for this to bring to man, this 7 day cycle, including a day of Sabbath keeping, if that benefit is not to be lost, we need God to do something more for us. You know, it's not that there's any deficiency in what God has done for us at creation. It's just that when we disobeyed him in Adam, we brought upon ourselves a drastic change for the worse, to where now we are in need of more if we are going to get along in this world. And so it looks like if the benefit to man of the Sabbath day instituted creation is not going to be lost, man needs more. And of course, you know, I can say that thinking ahead, the Lord is going to do more for man after this about the 7 day cycle that includes a day of Sabbath keeping. He is going to do more, and you can see in this that we need it. If wicked men are not going to be allowed simply to get away with misusing the 7 day cycle for their own purposes of taking advantage of others, something more is going to be needed. I am trying to demonstrate to you here, which I think, you know, is easy to see. I'm just pointing it out to you. The Sabbath commandment, the fourth commandment among the ten, you see in this history that we need it, because Sabbath keeping, Sabbath observance, seems like it is being forgotten. And we need to be told by God to remember it. And it seems like the idea that the seven-day cycle of work and Sabbath keeping that God instituted at creation, which is for man's benefit, it seems like that concept is being abused by the sinful. So when we look in here on the history of Jacob, what do we see about these things? One of the things we see is that the observance of the seven-day week, but with no mention of actual Sabbath keeping. And then we see the observance of marriage, but not kept according to its original institution. The observance of marriage, yes, but not kept according to its original institution. Jacob comes to Haran for the purpose of finding a wife. I didn't read that part, but how about backing up just a little bit into chapter 28? Chapter 28, verse 1. Isaac, Jacob's father, called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife." So you see that Jacob comes to Haran for the purpose of finding a wife. He comes there for a legitimate, a legal, a lawful purpose to find a wife. Notice that in this case, the father in the family, after having consulted with the mother about it and her having told him her ideas, then he agreed with her and he took the initiative with the young man to tell him, go take a wife. And we read that the same thing had gone on in the previous generation. Abraham, the father, had taken the initiative in getting a wife for Isaac, the son. So in both of those cases, the parents, in particular the father, took the initiative in getting a wife for the son. The main thing that the father in each case put to the son was, do not get a wife from among the Canaanites. Go to the people with whom we have an affinity who are not Canaanites and get a wife from among them. You understand that it's very easy to set that into our terms because the New Testament addresses that. There is a freedom for Christians to marry whoever you choose. Of course, if that person will agree to it. To marry whoever you choose. But that person has to be in the Lord. It can't be that you attach yourself in marriage to somebody who's not even a Christian. And traditionally, then that's made even more specific. If you are a Christian and you see, you understand that the Pope's system, the whole thing is the system of Antichrist, then somebody who understands that and is a Protestant doesn't want to, attach himself to Roman Catholic. And so that principle is for that we're seeing here is very easily applied to us. You can hear Abraham saying to his servant, do not get my son a wife from the Canaanites. And you can hear that man then, that son, Isaac, now the father, saying to his son, don't take a wife from the Canaanites. The Canaanites are those who are in gross idolatry. Not that others are not also, they are. But are upon whom destruction from God is already pronounced. And so they are not to take a wife from among the Canaanites who are going to be destroyed by the Lord. And so, you are not to take a husband or a wife from the world, from the unbelievers. Of course, there are plenty of people who are unbelievers at present. The Lord will save, and that's, you know, that's part of this story also. But the same advice about marriage pertains today in those terms. But you see that among these people, the hand of the Lord was upon them. Their idea was, it's good to get married. And the young man, you know, there comes a time where he should get married, and the parents, the father in particular, can urge that on him. Notice that Jacob understands and knows, it seems to be just kind of a given, that in order to have Rachel, he needs to marry her. Now, that, you know, it should be able to go without saying. In our present culture, of course, it doesn't go without saying. Strong forces in our culture are trying to communicate to young people to have one another. You don't need to get married. But Jacob recognizes, you know, these families, it just seems like a given with them. For him to have Rachel, he needs to get married. And then there's also the interesting feature that in order for that to happen, he's going to have the permission of the father. The father's going to have to give her to him. He can't just inform the father, Rachel and I are getting married. She needs to be given to him by the father. Isn't it interesting how that has nearly faded from our society's practice? However, it's still in the ceremony. Isn't that interesting? Who gives this woman to be married to this man? Well, I suppose there are people for whom there has been no actual idea of that. The young people decided and they informed the parents. There was no asking of the father. The father might not even want it or whatever. And yet it's still in the ceremony. Thankfully among us, I think a lot of times there really is still that. There still is the young man seeking the father's permission and asking for the parents to give her hand in marriage. And so there it is in the ceremony. It's in the ceremony for good reason. There is this concept of giving. So these ideas about marriage, they're clearly in these people's minds. Jacob and the other people around him seem clearly to have these ideas. In order to have the woman, he needs to marry her. In order to marry her, she needs to be given to him by the father. You see that the time comes where these people break the natural law, the law of nature. They break the ordinance of God in marrying Jacob, not to one, but to two women. They break the law of nature when Jacob marries a second wife. It's a terrible thing we read about here. It's a tragic, it's an awful thing. It's hard to listen to it. It's distasteful to think about it. It's sad. It's maddening what happened. Laban put everybody in an impossibly difficult situation. When he cooked up the idea to substitute Leah in the dark, in the tent, in the dark, with the veil and everything, to substitute Leah. That being done, then, everybody was in an impossibly difficult situation. Jacob, the next morning, finds out what has happened, and his options are all bad, you know. But still, it did remain to him that having married Leah, he could abide by what these people all knew by nature, and they possibly knew by it being handed down, that God created us male and female, and the one man and the one woman are to join and then not be separated. In that terrible moment, he had opportunity to abide by what God had instituted at creation. The pressure was on him very strongly. You know, he had wanted Rachel for 7 years, worked for 7 years. It was an awful situation he was in. I suppose it was in Rachel's power not to agree to get married to him when he'd already married her sister. We know from the previous generation, and from Laban in particular, you can read back a few chapters, Laban said, "Let's ask the maiden if she's willing to go with you and get married." It was at least what he had said before, that a young lady would not be married to a man unless she agreed to it. So apparently there was opportunity for Rachel not to agree to this. And whatever opportunity, other opportunities there might have been for people not to go along with this, Leah apparently went along with this. Not exactly that Leah went along with the idea of the man getting married to two different women. She went along with the scheme that set that up that way. So, you know, it seems like there's opportunity there. Even after this horrible deed has been done, for there not to be this perversion of what God instituted. But they didn't stop. They went ahead, and he took the second woman also. So here these people broke the law of nature, the natural law, the ordinance God had established at creation, in marrying Jacob to a second wife. Now, you can't fail to appreciate the taste of justice that God gave to Jacob in this, right? You remember what had happened just before this, when Isaac, old and mostly blind, had called for his elder son Esau to come and be blessed by him. Jacob and his mother had dressed him up to resemble Esau, and he had posed as Esau, and even when the father asked, "Are you my very son Esau?" Jacob had said, "Yes, he was Esau." And they had, Jacob and his mother together, had deceived their father, his father. They had had one person pose as another to be put into that one's place so as to have something done by someone who couldn't see who it was. The resemblance to this event, of course, is uncanny. The very thing, I mean, of course, it's not exactly the same thing, but now what Jacob had done in his family, now Laban does to Jacob. The Lord's hand is on Jacob. The Lord has promised to be with him. The Lord is blessing him. The Lord is protecting him. That doesn't mean the Lord is not chastising him, right? The Lord does this to those he loves. His children, he treats as his children. And you know what children get? Children get a spanking when they need it. That's how parents who love their children treat them. And Jacob very much needed a spanking. Jacob very much needed to feel the sting of what it's like for someone to deceive you. And he felt it all right. Jacob received a taste of God's justice in this. There's an old way of saying this that I encountered in some of the old books. God repaid Jacob in his own coin. God repaid Jacob in his own coin. The Bible says if you roll a stone, it'll roll back on you. If you dig a pit, God will see that you fall in it. Mm-hmm. I point your attention to that so you can praise God for his justice, so that you can give him the glory for this. Sometimes there's a tendency to lean heavily on some of God's perfections and talk about them to the exclusion of others of God's perfections, and in so doing to get an idea of God as just kind of a big, squishy, soft, nice guy. You know, God is perfect in everything, including being perfect in justice. And that shows here, you know, who could have come up with this? This is not the work of a fiction author. People are smart, creative. God made us to be that way. There's some really neat things in fiction. But there's nothing to equal this in fiction, what God really did in truth. You see that Jacob had not set out to do this. He had not set out to marry two women. You know, he arrived there. Rachel was wonderful, at least wonderful looking. He knew there were two daughters. He didn't ask for them both, didn't want them both, didn't try to work for them both, didn't try to get them both. He just wanted one, just wanted Rachel. His father had sent him off to get a wife. He only sought a wife. That's all he wanted. And that's good. That's commendable. It's how it should be. It's good to look in on this and realize, okay, these people are only after one wife. What God instituted at creation, they understand it and remember it and observe it to that degree. But then Jacob does not completely resist the pressure to marry two women. He goes ahead and does that. And when we keep reading, of course, what do we find? He also accepted first one concubine and then another. Jacob's father, Isaac, had married only one woman, Rebekah. And the record has him having no other woman, never trying to get or getting any other woman. And that appears to have been Jacob's intention originally. But he did not effectively resist the temptation and pressure of the world around him to pervert God's institution by being unsatisfied with one woman. And we have all kinds of sympathy for the spot that he was in, right? But the fact is that having got married, he then took another woman, and then a third, and then a fourth. Now, you know, take a lesson from that, won't you? You might have the pleasure and privilege of meeting someone, having a kind of love for that person, meaning a real attraction and appreciation for that person, and getting to get married to that person, and then living with that person for a long, happy marriage, and that be how things go with you in life. That could be, right? That happens to some people. I hope you'll thank and praise the Lord all the time if that's the situation that you're blessed in. But you know what else might happen? It also might happen that you meet somebody and really like somebody. You might even say to yourself, I'm in love with him, I'm in love with her. And then that isn't who you end up getting married to, because that doesn't work out for some way, in some reason. You understand that then you can get married to somebody else. God made us that way. And you can have a happy life and faithful marriage with somebody that is not who you got meant to get married to in the first place. Now, hopefully it won't be quite as bad as what we experienced here, right? But you might experience that you end up married to not who you really meant to at first. I urge you, don't give in to the temptations that Jacob did, that in your fantasies, in your mind, in your heart, or in your actual actions, that you are not faithful to who you get married to because it wasn't who you, what you really wanted. It could be that you get you like somebody and love somebody and get married, and then afterward you meet somebody else that you think maybe you like better. Don't give in to the temptations that Jacob did. Could be that you get married to somebody and there's some fault or fail. Well, it will happen that there will be some faults or failings in the person, right? And you find them out and you don't like them, and you think, oh, there's somebody else in whom there are not these faults or failings. And so then you want to take that person. Oh, resist the temptations to which Jacob succumbed. Whoever it is that you marry, then take delight and joy in that person and be married till one of you dies, till death parts you. Let nothing else part you from that one and that only one. In this account where we look in on these people, we see an observance of the seven-day week, but no mention of Sabbath keeping. And we see the observance of marriage, but it's not kept in accordance with its original institution. So then what would we say about in response to those things? One thing is this. Although natural law, what we know inside us, although it's true and it's right and it is God's law, it isn't sufficient as a law to live by since we sinned in Adam. We should read these histories and realize we want something more suited to our situation. Adam and Eve, living in the state of innocency in the Garden of Eden, the natural law in their, you know, built into their hearts from creation was sufficient and appropriate. Now that we've sinned and we see how things go for us, we really should long for something more, better suited now to our situation. Knowing what's coming, of course, I can say we should rejoice when we get the Ten Commandments. As we're reading along and we get to the Ten Commandments, and now we have God speaking to where we can hear Him, and God carves something, writing it into stone, those same words, then we should be glad to have that. We should delight in it. We should humble ourselves before Him and admit, you know what? We really need this, and we're thankful to have it. Also, we should realize that these things that God made for us at the beginning, for our happiness, marriage and childbearing, work and Sabbath keeping, good as they are in the hands of our fellow men who are all sinful, which means we must not ultimately look for our true happiness in those things. Sure, God gives us marriage, and by marriage He brings us all kinds of happiness. But because it's only sinful people, including us, who are dealing with marriage, marriage is going to have heartache in it. Not everybody's going to be able to get married. Some people get married and won't be happy. Some people get married and there'll be something that parts them, an early death or something else. We cannot look ultimately for our happiness in that. You know, the way that we get to go through a seven-day cycle of working and Sabbath keeping, like we are enjoying right here today. Oh, it's a happy thing. Being able to go to your work in the morning with the strength and opportunity to do it and do your work and it be successful and it provides what you need and your family needs, being able to rest from it one day a week, assemble with the saints. Oh, this is wonderful. But you cannot look ultimately for your happiness in those things, because it's sinful people who have these things in our hands, and not everybody makes use of it. And sometimes people just downright abuse their fellow man through those things. Ultimately, our happiness is going to have to be in Jesus Christ as the fulfillment of those things. It's going to have to be in the work that Jesus Christ has done for us, living the perfect life for us, suffering and dying on the cross for us, and our faith in his work. Ultimately, that's going to have to be our eternal happiness. Having a 1 day and 7 day of rest, we can't look ultimately to our happiness, for our happiness to that, but instead to Jesus Christ, in whom is our rest from our labors, in whom we can rest forever. The same way with marriage and childbearing. We can't look ultimately for our happiness in marriage and childbearing. Good as they are, and as much as they bless us, we will have to look to our marriage to Jesus Christ, with us as his bride and him as our bridegroom. We'll have to look to our being God's children through faith in Jesus Christ, adopted to be sons of God with Jesus Christ. We'll have to look to Jesus Christ as the fulfillment of these things for our ultimate happiness, because they will not ultimately satisfy. Let's pray over these things.